Well, thank you for joining me tonight on Against the Grain on the phone right now from parts unknown, an undisclosed location. It's Kevin McDonald of the Red Hot Chili Pipers, who are coming to the Hanover Theater in Worcester on Saturday, March 15th. It's a great show. Tickets are on sale now at thehanovertheater.org. You want to get in the celebratory mood, especially following the winter we've had. You want to go see the Red Hot Chili Pipers on March 15th. Kevin, thank you for joining me.
No, it's always a pleasure, and I'm over in Bonnie, Scotland just now, so we're getting ready to depart. We actually leave very shortly to head over there, so looking forward to performing again. And Worcester's always a great gig and great theatre.
Thank you so much. We're excited to have you here. I know it's become almost an annual tradition for the Chili Pipers to come through in the spring. You guys do 200-plus shows a year. Is that accurate?
Yeah, 200 shows worldwide, everyone from New Zealand right across into Europe and into the U.S. and Canada. And yeah, we're very proud of what we do.
It's an incredible story for people that may not be familiar, and, you know, shame on them. Can you share a little bit of the origin story of how the Chili Pipers came to be? Because it is an interesting background.
Yeah, I mean, the real origin started way back in 1989 when I met Stuart Cassells, and I was 10, he was 9. And
we went to summer school with the Scottish Pipe Band Association. Oh, that's easy for me to say. Scottish Pipe Band Association. You'd think I'd had some whiskey tonight for my dinner, but not all Scottish thing, whiskey. Yeah, we met there, and then we had a kind of competitive nature between the two of us, and we became very close friends, and actually he's the godfather of my three kids, as it transpires now, some 40 years later. And in early 2000s, we kind of got bored of going to single-ised events, and I would do piping, he would do piping, and we thought, well, why don't we come together and do something at a corporate event? And we added a third set of bagpipes and two drummers, and we started playing rock music on bagpipes to corporate events. So if somebody was having like their 10th anniversary dinner or something like that, we would come and do a 30-minute spot. And kind of did that for 3 or 4 years, and it was just like pocket dollars you were getting. You're getting $20, $40, and it was paying the beer money at the weekend. And then in 2007, Stuart actually spotted an article in the newspaper to take part in a new talent show, because if you remember back to the 70s and 80s, and I'm barely old enough, is they were really popular in the UK and the US in terms of these talent shows, but they kind of died off.
Yeah.
And then they started to make a bit of a resurgence in the early 2000s. And just before Britain's Got Talent or America's Got Talent, and you've got, we had Pipe Idol, you had American Idol. Like, we went on and did one of these talent shows, and it was called When Will I Be Famous? Well, I'm still asking when I'll be famous, but We were very fortunate that we actually won the talent show, and all of a sudden, that was great because we got £10,000 on the night, or what's that, $14,000 we won on the night, and they kept on asking, you know, what will we do? And the funny part of it is that none of us could take it that seriously, because we just wanted to say, well, we're Scotsmen, we're going to go to the bar and drink it, you know. But it's the one where you hear the sob stories. So have. When it comes on in the television now, and you watch American Idol, or you watch Pop Idol in the UK, or Britain's Got Talent, or America's Got Talent, and it's the sob story, I honestly have to go, it's horrendous. You know, why are you making people cry on camera just to get a vote? You know, surely it's down to talent, but it's just the society we live in. So that was in 2007, and that really created a demand from the public to perform at open air. So we had to very quickly write a 90-minute set full of music. And I think the one thing about bagpipes is, you know, they're great for 10 minutes, they're great for maybe half an hour, but 90 minutes can
be a lot.
Cause your ears to bleed, I think, is the answer to that one. So I remember the very first show we did, which was over in Northern Ireland. There was a lot of talking. There was a lot of filling. So we had to pad out the show. And
yeah.
But we got there, and the more inspiring part of it was the fact that there was a demand there that you think after the first show, you know, nobody will come and see us again, and people did. And from there, we got booked to go and do an event in Hartford, Connecticut, in 2009. There used to be a festival called Pipes in the Valley. We came across and did that, Gail and Bob McClellan, and they used to run a company called Tenpenny Ale, and it was great. You know, we came across, and again, we thought it would just be a one-off, and that would be us, and it's our one adventure to America. And I hate to say it, now, looking back, sorry, is that we came across so naive. You know, we didn't have visas. We didn't know what to say. Immigration, what are you talking about? We're just here to play our bagpipes. Are you getting paid? We don't know. You know, it was like, fast forward to where we're at now. We've got proper lawyers that deal with our visa application. We've got full touring rigs. We've got, you know,
You're a business now.
Touring band, and it's... But you look back in those funny days and some of the funny things that we did on tour, and you just... I look back at it and go, it was just... 8 or 9 well-meaning guys just having a laugh, because nobody came from the industry as such. Like, we were all musicians, but nobody had ever toured before, so there was never a right or a wrong answer. There was just, let's not do that again, or that worked. Let's do something that's as equally as good fun as that. So, and I think that's the real positive side of it, was it was a real camaraderie when we came across in 2009, and from that, we got a long extended... We signed up a contract to do an 8-week tour of Germany in 2010, and it just, the momentum really started to grow to the point where, at the end of 2017, I kind of got to the stage of going, listen, our diary is like the Star of David here. You know, one day we're in America, next we're in Germany, then we're back to America, then we're in Australia, and then we're back to Germany. And it was like, I really think I can now have confidence in the business that we can go to the respective countries and say, right, you can have us from March and April, you can have us April, May, June, you can have us. And from there, we've really built a successful touring run. And as you say, you know, we've been to the Worcester Theatre a number of times now, and it's a regular thing close to St. Patrick's Day that people know that we're in town.
Yeah.
And what's that's really allowed for us? It's allowed us to build a strong fan base in and around the New England area, basically, and that's tremendous. Every time you come along, and with a new album coming out, and it'll be presented pretty much on that gig, it's just great for me, you know.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. It's one of to your point, what starts as a lark becomes a lifelong business endeavor and has become a machine. You know, 200 shows a year. I know there's a big cast of musicians, so there you have multiple groups touring simultaneously. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So again, when I come back to 2017, what we had is the Star of David, and when we first started, there was the 5 original members, and then we went up to 8 members, and then after a while, some guy said, you know, I don't like touring, but I'm quite happy to stay back here, and our agent was like, well, I've got you an event here that you can come and play for 30 minutes. You don't really need... There's not a named person within the band. It's not like you've got Brian May out the front that you have to have them on the gig or they won't book you. They just wanted a theory and a concept. And that really got me thinking to go, well, wait a minute, if there's maybe 4 or 5 of the guys back here not wanting to travel, and I've gone and hired another 4 or 5 musicians to tour, why don't I use it almost like a training ground for new kids that want to come through? They can learn their trade off the guys that have done it. And when the time comes that maybe some other guys that are on tour don't want to do it, then they can naturally slot in. And over the years, it's really allowed kids that went to university to do traditional music and piping in particular to actually see a career, yeah, or at least an opportunity to sample a career in traditional music. And if I put it in numerical terms, you know, as a business in the 22 years, we've had a turnover in excess of $20 million. And that in itself is a staggering number for a bagpipe act. But the bigger staggering number is that what we have done is we've contributed nearly $8-9 million to traditional musicians, wow, allowing them to come through and giving them a sustainable income to actually experience touring the world as a bagpipe player or as a guitarist in a bagpipe band. And that's where I take probably the most pride out of it, is what we've allowed, or what the public have allowed us to do, is create a product that, you know, people want to come and see us.
It's really remarkable. And I think, well, first of all, I'm curious. I love the sort of training ground concept that it creates and the ability to offer students and young folks coming out of university a chance to experience something like this before they've made a formal career decision, so that they can see there's an alternate pathway there. And one of the cool things, and I want to ask you about the kilts and the black shirts, because I know it's become a signature look for the group. Was that part of when you first came to Hartford, of all places, to tour, Was that part of the act at that point, or did the kilts and black shirts evolve over time?
No. The kilts were in position, and then we did an event. Within the first dozen or so events, we spotted a red sporran in Edinburgh, and we were like, right, that needs to be it. And it originally started as grey kilts with black shirts, and then we quickly added the red sporran on. So really, within the first 6 months, we had our kind of identity. And the biggest thing that we took away from it compared to other bands is it gave us a unique selling point of an identity.
Yeah.
And it's one of the challenges I have as a current business owner is that some of the new kids that have come in said, oh, can we change it? And I'm like, yeah, you can change it, but you can change it to something that's similar to what we've got because it's what our reputation is built around of the uniqueness of, effectively, as I've said in other interviews, is we're like the Blue Man Group of bagpipes because people know the Blue Man Group, but they've not got a clue who's in it. And,
right.
And that's the... And I think the we all learned as in terms of the original five that our egos weren't... They were never going to get out of control because a couple of times when we took a gig and we put a youngster in, as the logic tells you that people will go, well, it's not the same without him. And I was like, right, oh, here we go. Well, you know, the guys will miss me. And then it was the birth of my third son that I didn't travel to Singapore. And I was going, right, this will be a kind of test case. And it defied logic because actually the fan base was like, oh, we really like the young, skinny, good-looking piper that replaced the fat, grey, old guy. Like, oh, great. Right, okay. So actually, what has allowed the band to evolve, and with a constant evolution of players within it, is not only does the music evolved, but the fans have actually kind of gone with that flow of the new kid coming in and getting to know the new kid. And then every so often, one of the guys that's maybe toured back, you know, there was one guy, a guy called Kyle Warren, who'll actually be over for that show. And Kyle toured with me in 2010, 2011, and then went over to live in Australia for 7 or 8 years and then came back and offered him a couple of gigs. Now he's a full-time teacher and he takes a week off and he comes and does a show and people are like, oh, it's great to see you back. And that's the most remarkable thing. You know, a guy can take a week off and I'll replace it with either somebody that's brand new or somebody that's toured in the past. And the fans love the opportunity to either re-engage with an old member or engage with a new member.
Yeah, and I would add, just from this perspective, one of the things that makes the kilts and the look so important is that it's a very visual show. The music is great, but the visual is sort of what lifts it to another level because you're watching the energy on stage, you're seeing guys dressed the part, so to speak, and the energy that is shared there in the visuals, the lighting and so forth, it really adds to the mix because you're playing music that's a mix of traditional Scottish music and rock and roll songs, and there's a real soulful, mournful element to that, especially the bagpipes obviously kind of evoke that.
Yeah.
And it creates this larger atmosphere that balances people that may not, on this side of the pond at least, recognize traditional Scottish music, but still are able to appreciate it that much further, as well as hearing songs. And there's got to be those moments in every show where they go, oh my God, they hear a song that you start playing and they lose their minds because they're playing Give Me Some Love, and you know, they're playing ZZ Top.
Yeah, and you as an entertainer, you can actually visibly see people go, oh my God, are they playing that? is that really getting on the bagpipes? And you can see that questioning happening in the brain. And what you can also see is quite funny is maybe like, for argument's sake, you've been to 2 or 3 shows and you take a friend that hasn't been it, you kind of know what's coming.
Yeah.
And you enjoy watching the reaction of the person that you know they're going to do what you did on the first show. And we see that from stage and it gives you a sense of, you know what, we're still doing something right here because we're putting a smile on people's faces. And I think in the era that we're in at the moment, with the economy, with politics, you know, people just need a couple hours.
That's right. We need an escape.
Or that television isn't playing something that you're like, can I get any more depressed? Well, the Chili's are the exact opposite of that because you leave on a high looking forward to the rest of your week.
Yeah, maybe don't.
You're enjoying the rest of your weekend.
Yeah, maybe don't tour with Bell and Sebastian.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious to the point about the audience. How much does the audience's energy propel the band forward as you're playing? How much does that come into the mix of what you're doing?
I think there is automatically, as a musician, if the audience are right up for it at the start, you definitely get carried on that wave. But I'll also say that some of the best shows that we've ever done is where we're playing to an audience of 80 or 100 people. And it actually, it's just the... We, as musicians and as performers in the band, just love what we do. And it's that's the thing that gets me, is I don't care whether I'm playing to 10 people and the energy I have. And actually, you know, you can get deep and meaningful. It's like, you know, I went through quite a bad divorce, and actually being on stage was probably one thing that kept me sane through all of it, because actually, as a musician, you can switch off and you can just do it. And I remember watching an interview with a famous sports star, and he was like, you know, why, you know, he'd made the problems with one of his children, unfortunately passed away, and he was like, how could you go out on a field and smile and all that? He says, because that 90 minutes or that 100 minutes,
right,
you are in a zone.
It's an escape.
Exactly. And the thing for me about music and what we do, and I suppose it wouldn't necessarily just be what the Chili Pipers do, it's what any musical entertainer does, is that release from our side should convey itself on to the audience. And as long as we're laughing and smiling, and, you know, you can never take what we do too seriously. And I think that's the one thing that's encouraged why our audience depth is from 8 to 108 is because it fits every size. And even if an 8-year-old doesn't know what Thunderstruck AC/DC is, the lights, the movement, the energy, the fun, they'll get it. That's the most remarkable thing about it.
For sure. The last question, I'm sure you get this all the time, but I'm very much looking forward to the show on the 15th at the Hanover Theater. We're speaking with Kevin MacDonald from the Red Hot Chili Pipers. Get it straight, folks, the Red Hot Chili Pipers. You mix traditional Scottish music and rock and roll. How do you choose the songs that you're going to play? Because obviously the bagpipes add a wrinkle to it, being in the outside of the Boston area, but in New England, certainly the Dropkick Murphys have introduced punk rock with bagpipes quite well. But how do you find the songs that are going to be crowd pleasers, pleasing to the musicians themselves, of course, and that fit your style? Because it's not karaoke. You're specifically choosing these songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also take a long time to actually choose what we're going to do, because a lot of songs actually don't fit in the bagpipes because we're limited to the number of notes. But secondly, it's also trying to find longevity in those, because you could go to the charts today and pick 10 songs, whether it be country chart or whether it be just a pop chart, and play a song, and within 2 weeks, that song's forgotten.
Yeah.
So we've always looked through back history of trying to find major pop songs that are synonymous with major artists that then you can play around with. And you might try like 5 or 6 tracks relating to AC/DC, and only 2 of them or 3 of them might work. And that's really how we go about selecting. I think the one thing we have done, you know, to get 23 years down the line and 10 albums, you know, I think we've probably turned over every stone possible to find the next one. You know, and it's part of why we done our latest album is Back to Roots. It's not because we ran out of rock material. It's actually more to demonstrate to the world that not only is bagpipes cool in our heads for traditional music, but letting people understand that, you know what, you can have some pretty cool stuff, even if it's non-recognisable as a rock anthem. And I think what we've tried to do in our latest album, which comes out, as I say, it comes out the end of this month, beginning of the next month, we're just waiting for the final stock to arrive, is it's really just taking us back to that pipe band route of what we did. You know, three guys, two drums, where it all started, and then just demonstrating the skill set that the musicians, because that's the one thing that sometimes I don't think we get credit for within the traditional music scene, is actually all these kids that are coming through now are top class at what they do. You know, they're, as I was explaining to somebody else, they're the NFL players with bagpipes. You know, we are talking your Tom Brady's to your, although he's maybe a bad one.
In this area, Tom Brady's a god, so he's the one you want to go with.
He's still a god, even though he went to Tampa.
We all blame Belichick for that. It's not Brady's fault.
And more importantly, would you have kept him if Belichick said?
100%. It would have been another title.
Yeah. I'm a big NFL fan, so the last time I was over, I took my 3 kids to the Gillette Stadium, so that was a pretty cool experience.
I'm sure. Well, we are excited for a cool experience. March 15th, Saturday night, The Red Hot Chili Pipers are going to be at the Hanover Theater. They are touring in support of their new album, Back to the Roots, coming out very shortly. It's a phenomenal show. If you haven't been before, get your tickets. And I believe it sells out every year, so you want to hurry up and get your tickets. TheHanoverTheater.org has the info. Kevin McDonald, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us tonight on Against the Grain.
Thank you very much for your time. It's been great to catch up with you.
Thank you. You too.